It's take two. We're live, pal. Glad to be back. Andrew Zarian, are you frustrated by the previous technological difficulties? Are you ready to go?
You know, our producer ripped out all the cables. And he just said, hell with this. He just ripped everything out.
Oh, it's great to be back. Andrew and I haven't done a show in a few weeks, so it's a great week to kind of talk about stuff because a lot of stuff is happening in wrestling today. But before we even get to that, I want to make one mention of somebody who is very near and dear to our hearts. Got married this weekend. One Denise Salcedo. Congratulations, Denise.
Yes, Denise got married. Star-studded lineup at the wedding. I saw a bunch of people there.
It looked awesome. It looked like so much fun. She looked like she was having a blast, and that's the most important thing. And yeah, that was a great thing, and I'm so happy, so proud for her. You know, we've kind of talked a little bit about her fiance and now husband offline a little bit about kind of the craziness of what she does and how that, you know, affects him or whatever. But sounds like they are a great couple. Congratulations, Denise, again. Okay, so let's just get into it because because of the technical difficulties, we have less of a time to do the show before Lance gets mad at us. But the Triple H era has begun, dude. Like before before we took our little hiatus, Vince McMahon was still in charge. He's no longer in charge. Triple H is in charge. What do you think about that whole thing?
What a crazy time for wrestling, right? The Vince McMahon era, 40 years or so, running WWE, being the booker, right? That's the most important thing. I think a lot of people seeing this as like, well, he's out as CEO. No, but it's a one-man show. I mean, obviously they got a big team, but it really comes down to his opinion on everything. And the deciding factor is no longer there. And it's a whole new perspective on things. You know, regardless of how many times we say, we're not going to see an instant change.
Yeah.
There is going to be some significant changes because this is a whole different, I mean, different people are running a company. Things like that happen all the time. You know, somebody compared, he's like, well, you know, when a CEO at General Motors, you know, retires and a new one comes in, things really don't change that quickly. I'm like, yeah, but we're not talking about General Motors. We're talking about, I mean, that was somebody brought that up to me. And I'm like, we're talking about a company that's really a one-man philosophy.
Yes, very much so.
That guy's gone. So very excited to see what happens.
Okay, so we'll talk about SummerSlam a little bit here. But the Raw rating came out. I think they did a 0.62. So really good number, probably somewhat buoyed by the fact that I think was the first hour fully commercial free.
The first hour was commercial free. Yeah, yeah.
So that I'm sure that helped.
I think had that
pretty smart thing to do because you know when history looks back, right? When they're like, oh, what did the first number post Vince McMahon do? And it was like, oh, they did a really good number. That should, you know, they were looking forward to the new regime. And so somewhat, you know, buoyed by that. But overall, coming after SummerSlam, which, you know, I was kind of wondering, now we do this in a bit of a bubble. And, you know, who knows what the people around, you know, who used to be fans thought about this whole Vince being gone. And if that triggered any interest in SummerSlam, I didn't seem to see that there was any more interest in SummerSlam based off of that information. But for me, as someone who is very close to this, I was way more intrigued watching SummerSlam with Vince out than I was previously. Because you want to see, okay, like who does Triple H think? You know, what type of things is he doing? And we also saw that on Raw. We got to see Bayley. We saw Io Shirai, now Io Sky. One of the few changes to names that I actually do like, and Dakota Kai. And, you know, I'd heard something that I kind of want to get your thoughts on. Somebody told me that they had heard that this Bayley threesome, this group that they created, that was actually pitched in some way to Vince, and he actually denied it. So this was like Triple H coming back and saying, okay, the old man denied this idea, but I like this idea, so we're going to do it. Did you hear anything about that?
I didn't know. I was trying to find out like when this was decided, when it happened, because in talking to people, most of the people over there that I spoke to said, you know, a lot of the stuff that you saw was set already in stone from a while ago. We have to get through a lot of these changes and then we'll start seeing, you know, new booking ideas and everything. I don't know if this was new. I don't know if this was old. I've asked about Bailey numerous times. Bailey was supposed to return a while ago and then there was a setback and there was another. So I really don't have the answer there, but I mean, I'm excited to see what they're going to do. And obviously this is a very different, I guess a different type of stable they put together. I don't know if this would have happened prior to if Vince wasn't there. I would assume no, right?
That's what I thought, because now the key for me wasn't Bailey. The key for me was pairing Dakota Kai, who was not with the company, right? Like, because they had let her go, and Io Shirai, who I think she made it very clear that she wasn't going to go back to NXT, and so those two there told me that was a Triple H thing, was bringing both of them back. So I can't imagine that was a Vince thing. And the other thing that couldn't have been a Vince thing was this Ciampa push on Raw Monday night. Like, Ciampa won two matches. Now he's the number one contender for the U.S. Championship. Now, if he goes in and Lashley just bulldozes him, then doesn't really mean that much. But if he does win this match and he becomes a U.S. champion, that's another stamp. That's another Triple H stamp right there.
Yeah, I think the Ciampa stuff, you know, he's a very unique look. So I would imagine they were going to do something with him. The Miz thing, you know, he had a great answer. I don't know if you saw the interview he did. Somebody asked him, like, what do you think of a pairing? I'm filling in the words here. I don't know the exact quote, but he was like, listen, he goes, I'm learning a lot, and I think it's a great person to be teamed up with, and I'm only getting started here. I thought that was a great answer. And you know what? Sometimes you need to do something like that to kind of introduce someone like Ciampa to the audience that may not know who he is, the casual fan. Is Miz the guy? It's weird that he's always like the man that you kind of do something with when you come to the Raw. Him, Ziggler, right? Those are the two. Yeah. It's an odd pairing. I'm glad that that AJ and him had this great match on Raw, but you got it now, I think, is the time, right? You're going to change this guy and make him into something else and kind of create this new Tommaso Ciampa on the main roster.
You know, what's funny about the Miz thing is, I'm one of Miz's harshest critics. I thought he was really bad in that match, by the way. I thought he was just off.
Jake Paul?
No. That was great. I'm talking about this match. Oh,
on Monday. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought he was bad and clumsy. For a guy who's a pretty darn good athlete, he's kind of a clumsy wrestler, and I don't understand why. But I'm a harsh critic of The Miz. You know, I always call him the employee of the month and all that stuff. But I think that is true, because if Miz has shown anything, it's the ability to stick around, right? You know, when these layoffs come, I don't imagine that Miz is usually scared to pick up his phone, right? Like, he's pretty confident. They're confident in him. They love all the things that he does. Now, he's never going to be the greatest wrestler. Even when he gets put into the main event portion, like, it always comes across to me as a little bit forced. But he is not a bad guy to be paired up with, because you know he's going to be on TV. They really love him. He's going to be part of something that has direction. Like, he's never in a program that just goes nowhere and then they restart it. Like, he's always in something that has an idea. So I actually agree with that. I think it's a good pairing for Ciampa.
Who, The Miz?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think listen, they'll have a good program for sure. I definitely want to see what they would do with Tommaso Ciampa on the main roster. I definitely want to see, will we get what we had on NXT? I don't know. Maybe.
What do you think about?
I mean, man, he has to feel confident now, right? He has to feel like $1 million being on that main roster. A lot of those guys have to feel like $1 million being on the main roster.
What do you think that means for Gargano?
That's the big question, right? A lot of people speculated that he was going to show up. I would imagine if there was a moment that he would come to the main roster and be happy doing it, this would be it. He would him being introduced here, even a freaking tag team, Garrett.
Yeah.
You know, like, put him in a tag team with Tommaso Ciampa and do that again. You could get a couple months out of that. You know, there's so many, there's a built-in program there for both of those guys that could really do a great show. And if you're going to have somebody beat the Usos, right? great example. You've taken a tag team. They've been against them. How many times did they have this match? How many times did, I mean, it was like five times, six times.
Yeah.
And the Usos, obviously, they're unbeatable, right? Nobody could beat them. They beat everybody. They ran through, I mean, a tag team that was being prized to be the top tag team in the company, one of them. And who do you put them up against? You don't really have tag teams anymore. Randy Orton's out. This would be great to tag these guys up. They're in Cleveland next week. If there was ever an opportunity, why not take it now?
Yeah, I agree with you. 100% agree with you. And so Edge made a pretty interesting, in his promo, he basically said his original idea for the Judgment Day was to get a bunch of people who may have been overlooked. And I thought, I imagine that the promo was probably mostly Edge and some writer. I don't think this was sort of in support of Triple H in any way, but that mention in his promo, I thought really it comes across as, hey, the current WWE fan is going to still enjoy what they watch. That you know, that number of average number of people who are watching this show every week, I think those people are going to be fine with Triple H taking over. But there's a chance that you could get some people who have gone away with this idea that, hey, your favorite, who, you know, maybe isn't has gotten pushed out or not in the best programs, with Triple H, there may be opportunity for those guys. So it's kind of an interesting thing, and I think it, you know, it babyfaces Triple H for sure. You know, Vince is the big bad heel, right? Like, that's kind of the way that it's been portrayed, and Triple H is the babyface here. And I just think that if they continue to promote it that way, there are going to be people who give this show a chance. Now, I run a Facebook group, the Fight Game Media Network Facebook group. And I would say when it comes to the percentage of people who choose AEW over WWE TV, it's probably 80-20 in that group. But out of that 80% who don't like WWE, there was a good number of people who have decided, hey, if Triple H is on board, I'm going to give this a chance again. And I think that's really important. Now, maybe nothing to the overall general audience, but there's a hardcore fan base that is now watching AEW who has stopped watching WWE, and you may be able to bring them back. And I think that's a good little thing for Triple H to experiment with. If he could bring those people who were previously watching, see AEW and go, oh, I like this better. Now bring some of those people back. That could be a big thing for him.
Yeah, no, definitely. And here's the other thing, right? Like something that, and somebody brought this up, because you also have to look at like who's agenting what matches, right? Because that's also going to play a big part in how comfortable they feel in modifying their style a little bit to kind of not appease Vince in a match and more so appease, you know, I guess Triple H.
Yeah, yeah. No, and look, there's this other thing, right? Sasha Banks and Naomi. I know there's a report on this website yesterday that said that there was, you know, some talks that they were possibly coming back. And this is another thing for Triple H to be able to be babyface in a way, which is there's some talent who Vince McMahon has alienated. A lot of those people are on AEW TV right now. Let's stop that bloodletting. Sasha Banks is so talented and is a force on the women's roster. Let's bring her back. Let's bring Naomi back. Let's figure out a way to, you know, say that we're sorry and apologize and get them back, because they're, you know, especially Sasha's great. How frustrated do you think he is looking at the AEW roster and going like, all those people were under my wing. I wish they were here, right? Like, because there's people in AEW who he was big proponents of, and now they're on the other side because he came in 2 months too late or 6 months too late.
Well, let's run that. I mean, we're running a little shorter here, right? Because it took us forever to get going today.
Yeah.
You see, rusty. We're a little bit of ring rust here. But let's look at this, right? Because there are so many people that were released, and And Hunter has to be strategic, just like how we were talking about AEW not grabbing too many, WWE guys. We have to 100%. Now look at who, forget about grabbing AEW guys, right? Because I'm talking about even just people that they release. You trimmed a lot of that roster down, okay? I don't like to see anybody released, but some of the names justifiably were released. You weren't really utilizing them as well, and you're keeping them on a contract, and then you're preventing them from going and working somewhere else. But look at the names that are still available to come back. Braun Strowman, they invested millions of dollars into this guy. They paid him millions of dollars, and they cut him. Bray Wyatt with...
Okay. Let's take a step back, though.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you think Strowman was a Vince guy, or you think he's a Triple H guy? Because that's also part of this, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he wasn't that much of a Vince guy. Vince let him go. You know, you got a 7-foot guy. When does Vince let go of these guys, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you... Look, I don't know where they stand, but I think if there was ever a case for big cast to come back to WWE,
he'd be great.
Isn't this the moment? Isn't this the guy? If I'm people are gonna think I'm nuts. I would pick up big cast. If you're looking for size, I would pick up Braun Strowman again and reinvent that guy. Totally, big cast. I'm super impressed with, and I'm a little biased here, right? I'm gonna tell you, he's a nice Queens boy.
Yes,
grew up in the city. I'm a big fan of his. Right, I want to see him do well, but. Braun Strowman, you know, he was in that stupid choo-choo nonsense.
Yeah.
How do you get over with that?
It's interesting because when was Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt, you know, sort of the coolest, right? Is when they were part of the Wyatt family. You could always bring them back. And that is a better version, I think, of Bray Wyatt than The Fiend is because, well, you know, The Fiend is kind of cool and can sell some merch. The Fiend is a babyface killer, and the Fiend
made that company more money than Bray Wyatt ever did. That's
for sure.
I mean, that's also part 100%.
But they still, like, he's still not there, right? Like, so whatever the reason is. But I'm saying, if you want to bring back Braun Strowman, I think he was from a fan favorite perspective, from a this gimmick works perspective, he was always he was a little bit cooler in Wyatt family. Once he went solo, he became a big star. But I think the fans also kind of got tired of him being in those spots. So that's an interesting thing that Triple H now has to deal with. This is now his job. Is Braun Strowman coming in at what we would have to pay him? Is he of that value? Same with Bray Wyatt. I think it's a great opportunity for talent, though, right now, because we know Vince's game is, as far as what he wants in a look, it is sort of predictable in a way. Grabbing Cody was a fantastic strategy by him. You know, there's other people on AEW that he probably was like, I don't really get that guy. But now Triple H is a little bit more open-minded to talent, as we saw by NXT. Some of those AEW talents who Vince may have not been interested in at all, Triple H may be interested in them. So that makes the game much better for talent, too.
If you're looking at the current NXT roster, because right, obviously it's not Hunter's NXT. This is a very different NXT, right? On that roster, other than Braun Breaker, because we all... I think regardless of Vince or Triple H or Shawn Michaels running NXT, that guy is going to be poised as a star. Whether or not he gets over and he has that amazing career that everybody hopes he does, I don't know. But who else on that roster in NXT right now do you look at and you say, my God, this guy would never have stand a chance with Vince, but with Hunter, he could really do something here.
I got one.
Who would it be for you?
The person who comes to my mind immediately is Carmelo Hayes.
Carmelo Hayes, great. I mean, that's a great pick. And everybody else's pick also, I'm assuming, because that's who I had in my mind.
Well, we're on the same wavelength. Because he's a little small for Vince, but he's a good athlete, and I think he's becoming a good wrestler. And he's got on his side as his mouthpiece, my guy. I don't call him Trick Williams. I call him Trick Daddy Williams. Trick Daddy Williams. By the way, that's a good get for your club, Trick Daddy.
Trick Daddy. You know what? I could get Trick Daddy. You know what? I think I did have Trick Daddy. I think I had booked Trick Daddy. No, 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 no. Big Daddy Kane. I had booked Big Daddy Kane. Big Sorry.
Daddy. Yeah, Big Daddy Kane. Big Daddy Kane's good too. But yeah, like as a twosome with Trick Daddy Williams and Carmelo Hayes on this version of Triple H's WWE main roster, I think they could be a pretty good sort of up and coming act. Now you wouldn't put them in the main event right away, you know, but you would build them up. And I think, you know, Vince would immediately go, okay, how do we split them up? I like the guy who can talk and the guy who's really tall, even though he can't wrestle that well. Triple H understands who those guys are.
Yeah, no, I definitely. Now, if there's like Miro would be a guy, right? Like Miro.
I mean, Miro should have been. He should have been giant in WWE, right?
There was no reason why Miro could not have been a top guy there, right? But again, it's creative. It all comes down to creative, you know. And now we'll finally get to see it, you know. And this is a big test for Hunter, and it's a lot of pressure on him. He built this amazing thing with NXT that unanimously was beloved. Even people that are not so much. Like, I got a bunch of one of my best friends, Mike, right? And he has three boys. They love wrestling. They watch Raw, they watch SmackDown, they watch the pay-per-views. They don't watch AEW, and they don't watch NXT. No interest in NXT at all from the kids. Yeah. No interest from him. You know, he's a 44-year-old man. No interest. He'll watch the wrestling stuff with his kids. He grew up watching it, so he's familiar with the product. He gets it. He knows what's going on. He was telling me, he goes, you know, I can't watch NXT. I'm like, why is that? He goes, it's not what I'm familiar with. So for Hunter now to take the main roster and start booking like NXT, he won't do that. And he can't work on the main roster. Listen, I want to see those great matches. I want to see NXT. It's just that NXT has long gone. They have changed the focus. It's a different show now. However, can Hunter... And this is a question for you and everybody else. Will Hunter be able to steer, you know, do a 180 and kind of bring this company into the renaissance that everybody thinks it's going to become? And this isn't my thoughts. It's not my opinion. I think Hunter's going to do fantastic. I think they're going to... Mm-hmm. He's proven that he knows wrestling and he knows how to book wrestling. However, will he... What kind of turnaround are we talking about? In how long? Are we looking at a 6 month, oh my gosh, boom. You look at those ratings, a 0.61, like you said in the demo for Raw.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. 2.2 million people. That's great. But can you get it to 3? Can you get, you know, at least get SmackDown to 3? Can you get Raw to 2.5? Will you see, I guess, a ratings turnaround? Because it's been dwindling for 20 years.
I mean, with the way the TV works now and how many people, I think I saw a stat the other day that said, let's say 20 years ago, there was 110 homes wired with cable, and now there's only 70. So that your overall a home audience is shrinking. So, you know, I think if they could get the rating higher than what it is, that's like fantastic. But if they can keep it where it is, which is they're stabilizing, which they've been doing for this year, I think that's fantastic as well. Maybe you know, it's not as pie in the sky as moving that number upwards. But
I mean, they hit pretty much rock bottom with those numbers. 1.3 million, 1.4 million for whatever. Yeah. Well, 1.4 million for Monday Night Raw, a institution on television to do, right? 1.4 million. You know, for WWE, that's not, they don't feel good about those numbers. No matter how much they BS you about the viewership has changed and metrics is different, they don't want to be 1.2 million. They want to be higher than that. I think people recognize the necessity for that show to do at least 2 million people a week to have a, you know, growth period. But this is a very interesting transitional time for the company. It's exciting, right? We're all talking about it. I watched Raw in its entirety straight the last 3 weeks.
Wow. Amazing.
I haven't done that in very long time. I catch it the following day on Hulu. I catch it on my DVR. You know, I'll fast forward. I didn't fast forward through anything. I watched the entire thing because I wanted to see what's going to happen next on the show. And that's something that's been missing tremendously in that company on TV.
100% agree. And so, okay, so here's how I see Triple H's job. What makes his job hard? This show, this company, Raw, SmackDown, you called it, Raw's an institution. How do you keep the fans who have been watching and not drifting, how do you keep those people happy with what they're seeing? Because they're the base, right? And then can you make changes that bring people back? Like, that's the hard part of this whole thing. He could run out the Vince blueprint completely. He can just keep doing that over and over and over. And we know there's a number of people that will still watch. How many more times are we going to see Brock versus Roman? They could continue that back until it just dies, right? Because it has worked.
I think this was it. I think this was the last one.
I hope that it's it. But if someone gets hurt, you know, who's always at his phone constantly, you know, Brock's probably watching his phone even more than you and me. He's just waiting for that call from WWE that someone got hurt and they need him back sooner.
All right, I'm in the main event again.
Yep, exactly. So that's a big thing for Triple H. Is I know what we saw in NXT, what kind of wrestling he was sort of interested in doing. And that is not the same as what we see normally on Raw and SmackDown. So he's going to bring some of that in, but he can't bring it in too much because there is a fan base here that enjoys what Vince was doing. So that's going to be a thing for him. But here's sort of relating to your question. NXT, is it still going to be the same NXT that we've been watching, which just turned me off completely?
Don't like the lighting that they use that's the same in my studio?
My God.
You don't like the purple and the yellow and the pink?
No, I like your studio lighting. It works well for you. But I'm not sure that it's the greatest for that show. And also, it just makes that show feel lame. Is lame the right word? Because they can't sell tickets, so they just got to do it in that little warehouse that they built. But I guess my question is does NXT stay the way that it is? Or does Triple H go, hey, I had an idea for NXT that was working for a good amount of time. And then when Vince kind of, you know, put his hands in it a little bit and put us against AEW, then it didn't work as well. Do they lean a little bit more towards what they did? Because if they do, I'm back in as a viewer. If we keep the same NXT that we have now, I'm out.
So I have 2 points here, right? One was... I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I wanted to talk about this on Observer Live and I totally forgot. I spoke to somebody about Vince's booking, right? And how it's what his philosophy is or how it works. It really goes based on his thought process. But what was said to me was interesting. They're like, listen, the internet thinks like Vince is a senile, terrible at his job, old man. And that's not the case. What it is, however, is that, you know, when you age, especially in your 70s, you lose touch with what is happening in pop culture and you're no longer firing at 100% with your thought and your creativity. Your life changes. All these things happen. Vince firing at 75%. Right. And that's how they said it. Like a Vince firing at 75% versus like him at 85 or 90% with his thought process and booking philosophy makes a huge difference on TV. So for every, you know, 10 ideas that you come across or Vince suggests before, maybe 7 of those 10 were great ideas. Now, maybe it's like 5 of them. But however, you're still going to go with those other ones that aren't great because you got to fill time, especially 3 hours. Now, I thought that was interesting to look at it because he didn't bury Vince. It was like, oh, my God, thank God Hunter's here. You know, that wasn't the response I got from people in NXT. I mean, some people, yes, that was 100% response, but there were other people. I'll say that a lot of the talent. I mean, there's a lot of that going on, right, with the talent. Right. But as far as the writing team goes, and as far as like those kind of guys that are involved in creative, the story was that, you know, he got older and he has these great ideas and execution, but it's just not all the time. And we've seen him do great stuff. I mean, how many things have gone on in the last couple of years that we thought, oh, my God, that was great. Why can't they do that more? Because, you know, you're 70-something years old and you're not a creative genius like you used to be. I mean, I don't know if he ever was a creative genius, but...
What'd you think of Sean's report about how the person who took the meeting minutes would have to kind of take out some of the language that Vince was using?
Yeah. Ah! Yeah. You know, that's... Yeah, I saw that. That's...
That one kind of gave me goosebumps a little bit. I'm like, oh man, I wouldn't want to see the things that he said.
I want to see. Yeah, I want to see what's in the minutes. I want to see.
Okay,
I wanna see what he's saying and ranting about. But NXT, I don't think they'll ever go back to the black and gold era. Listen, here's the reality. They invested a lot of time, a lot of effort. They traveled, they toured, they signed essentially all of Ring of Honor. Yep. You know, that approach will not work for them. I loved it. It was great for me. It's not a mainstream product. They weren't really developing new talent. They were just taking guys that were the best of the best, putting them on TV, and they were having these classic five-star matches every single time that they were. I mean, those NXT takeovers, Garrett, I mean, they were. I've never seen a run that a brand had or a company had that had that many consistent home runs. As far as a pay-per-view went, as far as, you know, major angles went, title changes went, everything was done perfectly. However, what did that translate for business for them on the main roster? That's the end goal for them. That's all they look at.
But also the guy who was in charge of the main roster didn't necessarily, you know, he wasn't in sync with that stuff. He probably wasn't even watching it, right?
Hey, I'm going to throw you their thought process. I'm picking a name at random, okay?
Yep.
Johnny Gargano.
Sure.
They invested X amount of money in Gargano, X amount of time, X amount of effort. He's beloved. We love him, right?
So much so that Dave thought that was the daddy chant was for Johnny Gargano.
So much so that Dave thought that was a daddy chant. Yeah. I mean, you know what? Dave did have a point with it. He did, because he was like his father on NXT. However... Yeah. Listen, guy, don't shoot me for this, because this is not my thought process, because I love Johnny Gargano. I love those guys. What did it do? What would it do for ratings and business on the main roster? Right. Why am I going to invest all this time in a guy that I don't think is going to be a top star when I could get a Logan Paul? And look at how great Logan Paul did. Why? This is what we want. We don't want, you know, a wrestler. We want Logan Paul to have these great matches. You know what? That's how they see things, and that's what this company is. I don't think that logic is going to disappear. I don't think the Logan Pauls and the Bad Bunnies are going to go away from having these big star matches. And, you know, Logan Paul was super impressive, man.
Yep.
I'm telling you, if Logan Paul went to them and was like, listen, man, I'm going to sign 3 years with you. I'm going to commit, and this is what we're going to do. They're going to put a title on him. Are you kidding me? I don't like the guy. I don't watch his content. He doesn't appeal to me, but you saw what it did to ratings. You saw his ability in the ring. It got picked up everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everybody was talking about it. That is how they see things. So a Roderick Strong, a Johnny Gargano coming to the main roster, what will it do? I don't know, because that logic of having guys get prime time like a Logan Paul or a Ronda Rousey or a celebrity, that's not going to go away. This is that company now.
I don't think it should. I think it should stick around. But
yeah,
at the same time, I think you can sort of mold a couple of different things together where a Gargano and a Roderick Strong can get a shot, sort of like how Ciampa is getting a shot. Now, it doesn't have to be all of those guys, you know, but I do wonder, you know, if you're Triple H, you're like, man, like if he's caught in a little bit of a daydream, I wonder if he goes, huh, I really wish I had Adam Cole right now. Or just, you know, it doesn't have to be Adam Cole. It could be anybody that he had actually put some weight into, because, you know, those kind of guys were overlooked by Vince and may not be overlooked by Triple H. But ultimately, I think you're right, because what WWE is the bigger than life thing. And that's why that main event at SummerSlam was so incredible, at least the last 10 minutes or so of it. It was just bigger than life. It was like, who's got the brain to think of stuff like this? You know, AEW leans a little bit more towards like the hardcore style, the garbage wrestling style, the blood, the barbed wire. That is not my cup of tea.
Not but mine either.
I think they do a lot of that stuff fairly well because they have personalities who make it feel important. But I don't know if they ever would have a ring get picked up in one of the corners and you know, with a tractor and like that. That's just not the way that they usually do things. So that's why, you know, I like both products being good, and because they're different. And so we have variety, and we don't want AEW and WWE to be the same.
So I'll say this, right? Like AEW booking. I think Tony Khan is an unbelievable booker. I don't think anybody could deny what he's accomplished in 3 years, right? Can we say that he's done more as far as a book? Like in the short period of time, he has learned more mm-hmm. and he's been able to put together great TV from not being in the wrestling business. I think that helped him also, the perspective of being a little bit of an outsider and yet being so informed about the wrestling business. He had two bad weeks, okay? I mean, he's had a month of bad. It's been a month, right? He's had a month of just chaotic booking, injuries, New Japan in the mix, Ring of Honor in the mix, so many moving parts, right? But he had two bad weeks of TV. And people were acting like it's just over. Oh my God, he's lost it. Tony Khan has finally hit the wall with his booking. He doesn't know what he's doing. He needs some help. He needs to do this. This is 2 weeks. And that's how people reacted, right? And then obviously he redeemed himself. Last week was a fantastic show. Vince has had 40 years of consistent bad booking with some really good booking.
Yeah.
It just, the perspective was so interesting to me that, you know, we have sat through 40 years of ups and downs in this one company with ridiculous gimmicks and ridiculous this, ridiculous that. And yet we have come back week after week and continued watching with the logic of, well, it's Vince McMahon and his, you know, crazy booking. But Tony Khan has two bad weeks and everybody just jumps on him. The perspective is very different. I think for Tony now, he's battling a different optics battle than he was mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Now it's these home runs have to come regularly again. You know, those having two good weeks of TV and having two bad weeks of TV, it's not going to cut it. He needs to really, and I think he will. I think they're on the track now with, you know, Punk coming back and Omega coming back and things kind of moving into place. It's going to be interesting, the battle of TV with, you're not writing against Vince McMahon anymore. We're writing against a guy that's, you know, younger by at least 20 some odd years, that has a really good mind for the business, and that we've seen what he's able to do with NXT. The reality is, if NXT never happened, I don't think Tony Khan would have entered the wrestling world. So this is going to be a very interesting, my opinion. I don't have any inside information on that, but it was kind of what set the trajectory and the ball rolling for the renaissance and the boom of wrestling again in like 2016. So this is going to be, I'm really excited about this time period with pro wrestling. I think we're going to see a lot of changes here. Tons.
All right, we got 5 minutes left. Saved this for the end specifically because I didn't watch it. But I know you watched it. I saved myself from watching it. I didn't want to be sad. You know, you never want to see... my dad told me when I was young, he's like... he watched Muhammad Ali get beat up by Larry Holmes, who was great.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I used to always ask him, I was like, I want to watch that fight. He's like, no, you don't want to watch it. And I was like, why not? Like Larry Holmes. But he's like, if you're an Ali fan, that was one of the saddest days of your life. And so taking that, you know, I've thought about that, just what he said years and years and years ago to this with Ric Flair. I was like, nope, not watching. I don't care how good that show is. The undercard looked tremendous. I'm not watching. I don't want anything to do with it because I don't want that imprint on my brain, you know, about Ric Flair. I want the imprint that I currently have as a wrestler, obviously, about Ric Flair. So what did you think? Give me your synopsis here before we get out of here.
Let me tell you, Larry Holmes did beat Muhammad Ali, but
yes,
Muhammad Ali got his revenge at the end by sicking Mike Tyson on him. January 22nd, 1988, Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. All right, this was his revenge. Muhammad Ali finally got it. He was there. He was at ringside, right?
Yeah.
What did he say? He said something to Ali. I forgot what it was. by the way, that is my favorite era of boxing, 1980s to like late 90s boxing. That 15 years of heavyweight boxing was everything to me. If it continued, I'd probably be doing a boxing podcast. I'm not even exaggerating here. However, Ric Flair.
Yes.
I was excited for the show. I wasn't one of these detractors of the pay-per-view that was bashing it and saying like this shouldn't happen. I know Conrad, not really well, but I know him pretty good. I've had him on the show. We've spoken numerous, I talked to the guy. Mm-hmm. Or I have talked to the guy. I don't think he would ever put his father-in-law's life at risk if he truly believed that there was a major, major problem here. However, this was not the same Ric Flair that walked in into that match that we saw in those training videos. Those videos made him look, when I saw those, I thought to myself, my God, he's obviously he's older, but he's taking suplexes. He's, you know, able to go off the rope. He's able to get up when he falls to the ground. This was a very different Ric Flair than those videos. I think, you know, I'm happy for him, and I'm happy that he was able to close this and he didn't have that doubt about doing it one last time. He got it. It's done. I'm going to curse. Can I curse? I'm going to censor myself. I was effing terrified at the end. did you see that part? Okay. Andrade was doing his best to put on a smile and be like, no, he's okay. He's okay. He's okay. You know, when I fell and I fractured my shoulder and separating my shoulder and I couldn't lift it up, everybody was like, no, he's fine. He's fine. No, I could see it. That's a lie. That's a lie. Andrade was not confident in what he was saying. Flair looked at him. I think he said something like, I passed out, or yeah, he couldn't get the, I mean, if the, he was working, he couldn't get the
knucks.
Why do I keep going? The knuckles, brass knuckles. I kept saying nunchucks. It's not a nunchuck. He couldn't, and his hand is shaking, and he had to move it to the other hand. I was like, wow, okay. Either he's the greatest worker or he's going through something here. Yeah. But he put on that figure four, and he didn't get up. He didn't get up after that suplex. He took it was a delayed vertical. I mean, as delayed as they could do with Rick up there, mm-hmm. but it was somewhat of a delayed vertical, and he just never got up. People were comparing this to Vince at WrestleMania. Vince was walking around like Shawn Michaels in his peak compared to Rick. And no knock at Rick at all. All the respect in the world. I'm glad he got it out of his system, but I tweeted, I never want to see this again.
Yeah, and
I mean that with all the love and all the just admiration I have for professional wrestling. I just never want to see that man have another wrestling match ever again. I think he got the send off he wanted. I think Crockett, they brought it back. Andrade got the team with his father-in-law, the greatest wrestler of all time, arguably. I think for all involved, they should be very content with what they got and never do another Ric Flair match.
All right. You heard it from Andrew with the final word on the Ric Flair last match. That's going to be it for us.
By the way, it was a good show. Let me just say that. It was a really good show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. No. Everything I heard, yeah. Undercard was really fun. But we're going to get out of here before we get DMs from Lance. For Andrew, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.